Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast, your weekly download on current events, trends, market reports, and community discussions. Join us each week from Tampa, Florida, as we cover all aspects of the produce supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here's your host, Patrick Kelly.
Hey, produce people, welcome back to the Produce Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kelly. As always, I am honored to be here, coming to you live from Tampa, Florida. Today is September 19, 2022, everyone, and I am getting ready to head off to Nashville, Tennessee to join SEPC's Southern Innovation Conference. Now, today we do have a dual lineup. We have Jeff Watkin, our choice sponsor of Severin, who's going to be talking a little bit about sustainability, and then Juanita Gaglio, our fancy sponsor of Ag Tools, discussing data as forensics. That's right, bringing it all full circle and using those data and analytics to help grow your business. Then next week, we've got our virtual networking hour hosted by the Produce Industry Podcast. We're going to go over our new format, what to expect for 2023, and how you can gain more opportunity through networking. Next month, we have IFPA's Global Summit, October 28th through the 30th. We are going to be there at a Fresh Cravings powered by Booth in the hallway segment. So we're going to be serving fresh salsa. We're going to be podcasting and having all types of fun. Next, we've got our hike to Pico Duarte in the Dominican Republic, November 19th through the 23rd, just before Thanksgiving. We're going to be heading down. We're going water for all with Blue Missions and Continental Fresh. We are going to hike 27 miles and then help secure water for a village in the DR. So without further ado, everyone, we are going to get this episode started with Jeff Watkin and Juanita Gaglio. Hey, Jeff, welcome back. Thanks for having me here in Metro St. Louis, man.
Great to have you, Patrick. Always happy to have you visit us. I think this is the first time, actually.
Yes, sir, 100%. Got to see a little bit of the facility. If you followed me on LinkedIn, everyone, you got to see some snippets of what we were doing here in St. Louis, and we got a video coming out soon that's going to show the entire, or, hey, not the entire. You want to see it for yourself, you're going to have to come check out the Severin facility here in the Metro St. Louis area.
Absolutely. Yeah, we enjoyed having you. Always love having guests come through our facility and check out our processes. A lot of it's proprietary. We like to keep our cards close to our chest. But we are always happy to have our clients and prospects come through and educate them on packaging and how it's put together and how it's done.
So speaking of that, I mean, as you heard me talking through the facility, it was like plastic, plastic, plastic. And, you know, there's a lot of groups out there that they're putting the big X up and they're like, no, no, no. Well, listen, Severin is about sustainability, though. It's not just a bunch of plastic bags. Like I kept saying bags and you were like, it's netter, Patrick, it's netter. So I think we need to talk sustainability.
Absolutely. You know, as a packaging manufacturer, it's my responsibility to bring sustainable products to the market. It's my responsibility also to educate my clients and prospects on that as well. So that's one big thing at Severin we've done. We look for options, and we look for options that not only are just available for certain consumers, but all consumers, because that's a big issue that we are seeing nowadays. With sustainability, you know, there is only so many things we can do with the infrastructure we have in place.
So I saw you've got a recycling program. You have these BioAble Solutions bags. And, you know, everybody, you know, I'm sitting inside the conference room right now, and I got to at least do this because I've got two bags in front of me. And Jeff, you keep saying, like, you're like, you can feel, you can hear the difference, everything, right? So everyone, here's one bag. Okay, that's option one. And then here's the next bag. I mean, Jeff, I can feel because I have it in front of me, but I can hear the difference right off the bat. So, I mean, what is that? What and why is that difference?
So the difference what you just saw there was one, the first bag is two, it's a laminated structure, but it's two unlike materials. So that automatically takes it out of the recycling stream. We can't recycle it. It has to go to the landfill. That second bag you had there was actually two like structures that are recyclable. And not only are they recyclable, but they're recyclable to a return to store level or like a number two. A lot of people are familiar with recycle numbers that we have out there right nowadays. Now, bioweighable solutions is actually the next step with the recyclability options, because that's one thing that I keep on coming back around to. We need to give the consumer and the retailers options, and giving a product that has options available to it is really the true solution there, because we don't have the infrastructure available for everybody in the United States to be able to recycle plastics, right, single-use plastics right now.
So obviously you got Severin doing a lot for, I would say, the community, it sounds like, because I think that Rob was telling me that it takes 200-300 years to have plastic, I was going to say meltdown, like we're melting it, but it's like degrading, right? Okay. I mean, it takes that long. And then he was explaining to me the difference on what you guys are doing with these bags on how to create them to, I would say, degrade a little bit quicker than two, 300 years, you know, just a blink of an eye, right? Just a quick blink.
Exactly. You know, and that's the beauty of the BioAble solution line. One, it's drop-in ready. So you can actually, either it's a pouch, or if you're running our film or our netting or our tags, we can convert you over to the BioAble line. It's not a huge hit when it comes financially, which is a big issue with a lot of sustainable products that are hitting the market right now. On top of that, you get options here. That these lines are recyclable in the first 18 months of their life. And then when it starts to biosimulate or break down is when it can't get into the recycle stream, but it degrades at a rapid pace. And we have engineered products such as the pouches you have sitting in front of you there, Patrick, to degrade within 2 years compared to 300 to 500 years of traditional plastics.
200 to 500 years, again, we won't even be around. So the things that we have on this earth, and again, everything was plastic, you know, back in the days. I mean, heck, I used to, you know, help my uncle with his foot solutions company, and, you know, there was plastic suppliers that we would go see and get the plastic bottles, the plastic caps, the plastic, you know, the plastic tips. Everything was plastic, and, you know, now we're starting to realize, like, yeah, there's a lot of plastic in our landfills. Yeah, there's a lot of plastic in our oceans. There's a lot. I mean, I've been to a lot of different aquariums, and it's like, what is some of the main focuses there? They have these big plastic, I would say, you know, models of whales, and they're like, this is how much plastic we took out of the ocean this year, and this is how many, you know, aquarium life, you know, or aqua life that we saved this year because of plastic. So, you know, being a company that has plastic, it's a good sustainability program as well.
And see, that's one thing with BioAble Solutions. There's also plastics, but there's also microplastics. So there are solutions out there where it degrades down, but it doesn't degrade down fully. It degrades down to a microplastic form. And that's a huge problem. You know, you're still seeing that. So that gets into your food system, gets into your water systems, and it's interesting because BioAble Solutions actually will break down in both marine and terrestrial environments. So if it doesn't make it in the recycle stream, it makes it in a landfill, it's breaking down quicker. If it makes it into a marine environment, God forbid, it's still going to break down, and it doesn't leave microplastics behind.
Amazing, man. I mean, listen, love learning more about this. You know, if you want to hear more, learn more about Severin, they're going to be at the SCPC show here in September. They're going to be at the IFPA show in Orlando. You can learn more about them, hear more about them. I suggest contacting them, coming out, seeing a tour of their facility, and being able to see what they have to produce. Because, again, it's about seeing, it's about creating relationships, everyone. Jeff, again, I always ask if people want to get a hold of, you know, Severin, how can they do that?
Visit our website at sev-ren.com. You can also reach out to our social media outlets at Severin Packaging on LinkedIn or Instagram. You can also reach out to me personally, J. Watkin at sev-ren.com. Happy to always field questions, and I'm always big on transparency. Love to have people come through and show people our products and see how we can find solutions for them.
Appreciate that, Jeff. So let's go ahead and get Juanita Gaglio of Ag Tools on the line. We're going to switch from sustainability, talking about data analytics and weather widgets. So, Jeff, appreciate you, man. And we'll see you at the next upcoming show.
Absolutely, brother. Happy to be on. Always happy to help you out.
Discover orchard freshness on Amazon Fresh with Arctic Apple Slices. Arctic Apples stays orchard fresh longer than other prepackaged, pre-sliced apples. This means less waste and no more half-eaten apples. Plus, you'll love the undeniable freshly picked flavor. Arctic Apple slices are available in convenient grab-and-go bags in both Arctic Golden or Arctic Granny varieties in select markets on Amazon Fresh. Packable, snackable, 100% irresistible. In the heat of summer, you're just counting the days until cooler weather and all those fabulous fall flavors. Packed with a refreshing flavor everyone loves, Noble Florida Starburst Pomelos, the largest citrus on earth and the perfect sweet fall treat you've been waiting for. Perfectly ripe for a limited time. Look to NobleCitrus.com on where to purchase your next Noble Florida Starburst Pomelos. Are you ready to enhance your skills? Every day we are tasked to make fast, effective decisions to keep up with the fast-paced produce industry. At Ag Tools, we take the pressure off of gathering data to help make your day easier and more enjoyable. Connecting the supply chain with Ag Tools is unique, practical, and easy. Ag Tools can be used from multiple angles of the produce industry, from farmers all the way to logistics companies. We call that 360-degree decision-making day after day. Visit us at www.agtechtools.com to gain more reliable and relevant data to see more, achieve more. And now, back to our show. Juanita, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Patrick. It's great to be back. I always love all your interesting podcasts, and it covers everything within the industry.
All aspects of the produce and supply chain industry. You know, I keep saying from A to Z, asparagus to zucchini, and mm-hmm. You know, those apple guys are pissed. They're like, hey, man, we've been at the top of the food chain, you know, on the A list for a long time in schools around, you know, the globe. And, you know, I'm like, they're like, you really need to do a fruit to a vegetable. And I was like, nah, asparagus to zucchini all day. So it's great to have you back. I appreciate the support. Love having Ag Tools as a sponsor. Data is one of the biggest things and challenges, I say, within our industry, but it brings more opportunities than it does challenges, you know, Juanita. And even mm-hmm. since our last call, we've talked about the weather widgets. We've talked about the news. We've talked about what, you know, Ag Tools incorporates, you know, throughout it. And I always say, I'm not trying to hard sell everyone, but, you know, Juanita, it's an interesting time we're living in. Am I right?
Definitely. Nothing like it.
You're telling me. I mean, prices everywhere are going up. I mean, that comes from the bottom of the farmer all the way through the retailer. So talk to me. I mean, what can we let our listeners know in the ever-changing world of data and technology, you know, today?
Well, obviously, it's not just us within our industry that know that something's amiss. We're getting a sudden surge of interest from purchasing agents, the retailers, and food service, like when we were at the Monterey Food Service Show a few weeks ago or a month ago now. And there is definitely a real interest because even the Wall Street Journal has showing interest with an article a couple of days ago on how the high temperatures, this tremendous heat wave that has blanketed the entire U.S., but in particular, the western part of the U.S., because we grow so much here from Washington State, apples, cherries, all the way down through the lettuce belt, Salinas, Watsonville, strawberries. The Wall Street Journal article talks about how this heat wave has very much negatively impacted all of these products, everything from being short, the volumes are dropping, and whatever is available, that the crop now has even been compromised because of the heat, and there's the quality is very poor. In turn, it mentions that supermarkets are giving less shelf space to products with weather-induced discolorations, bruises, or burns. Stores are cutting prices on poor quality items to avoid getting stuck with them. And increasingly, this is the other interesting part, receiving products from Canada and Mexico, which I have even seen in a report that I did on pumpkins, which I'll tell you about in a bit. So everyone in the industry that we know, many people have been quoted about the incidence of disease in the company's fields has been really very bad the last 10 days. And the vegetable growers, it says the current heat wave is fueling diseases that kill or damage lettuce. And how does this all translate? All of that goes into looking at volume. We're looking at shipping prices and how the weather is, and even retail prices, how it's translated all the way through the food chain to the consumer. So this is why suddenly, this is where I'm going back to what I mentioned, we're getting this interest where people are knocking on our door saying, you know what, I think we really would like to look at this data, because we are seeing, and there was a quote in the Wall Street Journal, one of the gentlemen from one of the associations mentioned, this is the same, this season appears to closely resemble 2020 in terms of high temperatures and disease incidence in lettuce. So in doing so, we can go back historically and look at volumes. We can look at shipping prices, retail prices, and you start to weave a picture. It's a puzzle that as you put each piece into place, you're starting to see trends. And if you're having that same experience in 2020 and you're seeing, well, what did the crop size out? What was the quality? What were the pack outs? Then you can have a little bit of an idea, forecast, what your season might look like this year.
That's amazing.
Have you heard anything about this, the heat wave, or how it's affecting crops and other from other people as well?
Listen, I like how you ask me so like directly, because you know I do. I mean, being a California citrus grower, not myself, but working, you know, for a family, you know, that's a main concern all the time. You know, the direct heat. Obviously, we need very cold nights and, you know, warm days in the winter to grow our citrus. But yes, heat plays a huge factor in what's going to produce in the next crop, right? And, you know, I got to play a little bit of a devil's advocate too, because, you know, as I read this Wall Street Journal, and I have, we got to sometimes get past the defects too, right? I still say, you know, as much as I love seeing the Wall Street Journal tackle this and how, you know, we need to start looking at this. One of the comments that I didn't like, right, was, you know, supermarkets say they're going to give less shelf space to products that, you know, have what, you know, weather damage or discolorations or bruises or burns. But oh my gosh, people, that is such the wrong thing to do, because a lot of tree fruit products, right, they have hard skin, whether it's an avocado, a piece of citrus, you're not eating the outside of that product. You're eating the inside. So sometimes having those blemishes, it's totally okay. But we've also come to a society where if it's not perfect or looks perfect, then we're probably not going to purchase it. But this is still very big, because as we are growing California navels, and the water situation is already a huge problem in California with not having enough water over the last, you know, 20 years, Juanita. And then obviously that affects size. Well, guess what? The same thing with heat. If our trees are getting burnt and they're getting hammered with 108 plus, you know, degree weather, and then lack of water on top of that, yeah, it's not going to produce a yielding crop. It's going to produce a smaller crop, maybe some smaller sizes. Hey, maybe it might have more red scale, or maybe it might have more wind damage, right? Because they're going to, it's open to be, susceptible to something else, you know? So, 100%. I've seen it. And I think that that's where, you know, even the fields, there are seeing losses. But, you know, if you look at Martha, and I always talk about this, is that growers run on like a 3-year average, that they're not going to make money every year. It's just same thing with your stocks. There's years in our stocks that we don't make money every year. So we, as, you know, investors, planners, growers, you know, that are feeding the nation, then we got to plan a little bit differently.
Yeah. So that's where the data comes in again, because they're able to go in and take a look at historical data and overlay it as well on our weather widgets, because we have a patented technology. It's not just looking at the weather. It's actually being able to look at the weather historically, what was happening in that time frame, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, as well as forecasting. And we have set up the ideal minimum and maximum temperatures for that specific commodity in that specific region. So it really drills down into area of interest that a grower shipper or a buyer would be looking for, especially if they're sourcing from several sources. They're able to look at each region individually and see determine, well, there was, you know, looks like here in this region, the weather was much more favorable for the commodity I'm purchasing, or vice versa. And for
Yeah, I mean, you bring it to mind, and I might be jumping the gun there, but that's what makes you look at imports as a buyer, mm-hmm. right? I do procurement too, but we look at that and say, wait a minute, wait a second, right? Because if you're not getting the Brix level, you're not getting the sugar levels, you know, if you know what granulation is, you know, think about mm-hmm. like, you know, opening up an orange and you say it's granulated. Well, think about it like tasting, like it's like sandpaper in there, right?
Yes.
And it's like, you don't want to send that piece of fruit. You know, the late lanes variety of navels are granulated, mm-hmm. right? They're bigger. They're summer citrus, right? They're June, July, August, you know, navels. And, you know, they're a little bit more granulated inside. But now you got heat, you got water, you got a lot of different things. Yeah. You might look to maybe doing imports earlier. How's that affect you?
Very much so, because that's another thing they're looking at in the data set are the transitions. So when you're looking at sort, you can pull up as many areas of sourcing as you would like geographically, and you can see when the transitions have been made within the last 3, 5, 10, you know, 15 years. So this will also give a very good idea as to what's going to be happening this year or next year. If you're planning out, you know, 3, 5 years out, you could have a little bit better of a gauge on that based on past transitions. And what we're seeing with the weather changing, this incredible heat, is that the seasons where they used to overlap, there really is a bigger gaps now before the next transition to Mexico or Chile or Peru. So that's where they're trying to figure out, well, how do we close that gap? What do we need to do here? Do we need to buy more, beef up on it before, you know, as before the volume's really falling? So you're seeing some really interesting trends, and it all tells a story. And I like to call it data forensics, because you'll see one piece, you'll see, oh, why did the FOB price right here over a 5-year period? There's 1 year here where it just dropped off the chart. What happened? Then you have to go look at the volume, and you're seeing that the volume indeed did drop. Then we're looking at the weather, and you're seeing that there was terrible rain during that time frame, which really, this is a strawberry study that I did, that it was already the tail end of the season. And now that this torrential rain hit, it finished it off. That was it. So it's good to know these things to be able to plan for your either selling or purchasing product for your stores.
Yeah. And one thing that I saw, you know, I was at the Piggly Wiggly showcase a few weeks back, and it was amazing, because I also get to meet store owners, store operators, produce managers, mm-hmm. and you get to talk to them about, you know, what they feel about the taste preference, right? Because they have the consumers that are coming back saying, this tastes like crap. Oh my gosh, this Flavor Wave orange tastes so good. It's the best tasting piece of fruit. You need to have that connection too. So when you're mm-hmm. talking to, you know, as a produce manager, and you said, well, if you're a buyer, you know, think about if you are that buyer out there, okay? You now have to service a lot more people than just price, everyone. So one, you can get all this information off of the ag tool service, but then also by relaying this information down to the store levels, telling them why you're bringing in these regions. So then they're mm-hmm. able to communicate with the customers, you know, the everyday Judys and Pauls that are walking in going, hey, how you doing? You know what I mean? You want to connect with them. And I saw that at the showcase, is that the resignation of the brand, you know, from top to bottom. Why do we bring this in? How do we bring this in? You know, mm-hmm. one person asked me, and I say one, but I remember one specific lady individually, she was just like, so you're only California, but what about those Florida oranges? You know, what about this? And I was like, no, you know, we're a California based company, but even her at the store level, she was like, but doesn't Florida go year round? Do we just switch because of these reasons? Store level didn't even know that, Juanita.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you see in the data. If someone were to pull up the data and Florida, they're going to see that when California comes in, when Florida is, you know, all the transitions, same thing with tomatoes. There's a lot of different regions where tomatoes are growing from the Southwest, you know, California, Mexico. You can see all these different transitions, and that's really important in making some of these strategic decisions.
And yeah, and what we say is they are strategic, but also educated decisions. So mm-hmm. I always pull up the educated decision, because people are like, what do you mean? What do you mean I'm not educated? Well, listen, you could be educated by a book. You could be educated by life, right? They're all great, right?
But to have these experiences, to use the data, to learn it, to be involved in it, that's how you're going to make a proper educated decision, not based off emotion, but based off data, facts, and emotion.
Yes, and to that end, many times there's a feeling that everything's bought cheap, but we just want cheap. We want the cheapest price possible. Well, that doesn't really do you any good if the product coming in is not the best quality. And if people are not buying the product, your shrink is going to increase tremendously. And, you know, what are you rated on? What are most people rated on for their reviews or how they're evaluated? So all of that comes into play where you have to look at both ends of the scale to make a decision.
I agree. And I think that decision, like you said, it's going to be from multiple sources, mm-hmm. not just one, right? And I say that in the fact that you got to look around, right? You got to do your homework. You got to do your research, and being involved in the Ag Tools page, that's what you're able to do. You can click on all the resources and figure that out. And then when you do call your buddy, right? Because you know, people still send price sheets wanting to back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. So when you do call your buddy, you can at least have some of those extras to say, hey, did you notice that, you know, the last 15 days of weather in California was 108 versus in Chile and Peru, they're still getting, you know, 68 degree nights, mm-hmm. Which is making, you know, a better bricks, a better, you know, color, a better, you know, all the different things to, you mm-hmm. know, start talking and saying, listen, I really understand that you want California, you know, citrus right now, but, you know, your consumers will appreciate you a lot more by doing this.
Yeah. You know, and to that end, I mentioned about my pumpkin study because I found this very interesting. And this is where I thought, this is like being a forensic scientist. I pulled up some numbers for pumpkins, and this is U.S. imports. Mexico and Canada are the two main countries that bring the most imports into the United States. And you wouldn't think pumpkins is a real big deal. You know, oh, yeah, we have them around Halloween time. I was rather shocked.
I'm shocked.
Between 2019 and 2020, this is just imports, there was 159% increase in volume. Ooh. I went, what?
I'm going to have to talk to my buddy Mike Costio at Data Essentials. They do the food service data. Completely uh-huh. different than you. Don't no jealousy here, Juanita. But they do more of the food service of what are the top growing items on menus. I'm going to ask him about pumpkins and see, because if there's that big of an increase, is it all going to retail? How much has been in food service? What about distribution?
Well, this is why I found it very interesting. So the following year, 2020 to 21, again, this is just imports. There was 114% increase, a huge bump, with Mexico contributing most of the pumpkins coming into this country. So I'm thinking to myself, the US, we produce pumpkins here. What's going on here? Why would we have so much of an increase in imports with pumpkins? 159%? And pulling up the stats for US pumpkin volume. Indeed, it's 1 billion pounds. That was in 2020, the last figure registered by the USDA, 1 billion pounds. So I'm looking at here, 2021, it was 83 million imports. I'm going, that's really crazy. So in researching this, there are six states that produce the highest production of pumpkin volume in the US. However, about 15% of that goes to processing for pies and decorations. People aren't really eating them so much, and they think of them more in the U.S. as a seasonal item. The bright orange pumpkin is more of a seasonal item. So I thought, well, if you take 15% away from, you know, accounting for 15% for processed, as you get down to it, and I was looking at the 2020 figure, it comes down to about a quarter of the total volume of pumpkins. So the imports represent about a quarter of the total U.S. volume, and that would be in 2020. And I just found that really interesting, especially that there were two big volume bumps in pumpkins, and this is just imports, May and July. Who would ever think that May and July would have bumps and a surge?
Like May and July.
So yeah, as again, forensics, I just kept digging and digging, and one of the things that I did find was that in 2020, there isn't just the article looks like today, where they said there was a lot of rain in the Midwest, you know, where most of the pumpkins come from, and the average price of pumpkins had risen by about 15% because of the there was a shortage of pumpkins. So what it's showing is how it affects even the, you know, bringing the imports in with this 159%. It just really bumped it up.
Amazing.
And it also showed that consumers really do like pumpkins. And, you know, there's a lot more interest now because it's not just the orange pumpkins, which here in this country, I think we use them more as a seasonal item. And, you know, it could be pies or jack-o'-lanterns or decorations on the porch. But there are many other pumpkins. The one from Mexico is more of a white pumpkin that comes across. And people are really recognizing the value, the health. It's a very dense nutritional product and it holds up for months. It's very durable. And people, you know, pumpkin's delicious. I think people have realized it's year round and you can roast them. You can bake them. You can do a lot of things with them. So it's, I guess, you know, consumers are, there's been more of a demand and awareness of pumpkins because I never imagined to see 159% increase.
I'm going to bet decorations. You know, all these, listen, well, let's get, you know, all those weirdos that keep their Christmas trees up all year long and they just change the decorations from like Valentine's Day to like, you know, a 4th mm-hmm. of July and all that. I think that's what's happening. I think people are like, they love the pumpkins. So they're, you know, when they see pumpkins, they're grabbing them and putting them around their house. I mean, that's just my guess, everyone. I'm going to check more, you know, forensics as well and check with some groups, but I could totally see, you know, pumpkins being more of a household and eating, I would say, and then even decorating. You know, one thing that, you know, my buddy Quentin Rowe does here at Noble Citrus is they do pumpkins and pomelos. So what they do mm-hmm. is they will carve the pumpkins and then they mm-hmm. will paint the pomelos. And they'll put those outside the schools as well. So I think there's a lot of things that people are doing on all different varieties. But pumpkins, that's amazing how you're over 100% increase.
I was really shocked. I thought, what's going on here? I mean, this is just imports. Why would that be such a high number when we, you know, when I found out, you know, we have a billion pounds of pumpkins in 2020. But, you know, a good portion of that does go to the processing as well. And then you have another portion that people just buy to carve or jack-o'-lantern. And so, it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of different types of pumpkins. So I just thought that was an interesting discovery with data. I would never have known that unless you open up Ag Tools and you're looking at the volumes and the trends and
well, it's also good to know too. So, I mean, you know, as much as we keep talking about it, listen, everyone, you see the increase that Juanita just found in the pumpkins that can, you know, then be brought into a conversation to say, hey, you know, I see you guys are increasing in pumpkins. Is that taking the shelf space, the floor space, right? Cause then that could affect watermelon sales, right? That could affect mm-hmm. other things that are going within, you know, the produce department. So I think that's pretty cool that you found that. Juanita, just to, you know, get it closed out for the day. Are you going to be at any events coming up? If produce people want to find or chat with Ag Tools, or is there anywhere or anywhere you're going to be? Where can we find you? All that fun stuff.
Well, we will be at the Expo in Orlando at the end of October. So yeah, we'll give you more information on that. I don't think we're coming. You said the SC, what's it, the Southeastern Produce
Council?
I'll
be at SCPC this week. I will definitely be there. And then I know, like I said, after that is IFPA. I'll be at SCPC. So we're always looking. And then we've got a couple things coming up, everyone, to give you a little preview. Juanita and I are coming up with some live sessions and some video sessions for you to see some live demoing of the platform and have some fun and be able to ask questions. So between that, IFPA, and the end of the year, we've got some fun things coming to you by Ag Tools. So Juanita, if anybody wants to reach out, get a hold of you. How can they go about doing that?
My first name, Juanita, at agag.tools, TOOLS.
Well, Juanita, as I always say, always a pleasure, and we'll see you in the fields and on the horizon.
Thanks so much, Patrick. It's been great. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Produce Industry Podcast with Patrick Kelly. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Anchor to get new, fresh weekly episodes. For more, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Produce Industry Podcast. Until next time, see you in the fields or on the horizon.